Welcome to American Priorities with your host, Bill Federer. Stay tuned for the next exciting hour as we cover crises confronting our country and see them come into focus in light of history. Passing to posterity the blessings of freedom. And now your host for American Priorities, Bill Federer.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great day. I am in North Carolina, and my guest today, Reverend Austin Miles, is in Northern California, and we're talking to you over the Freedom Radio FM network all across America, and it is exciting to know that the Lord that we serve can use us in our humble lives to make a difference. Well, Reverend Austin Miles is a chaplain in Northern California. He is a writer and an historian. He is the author of Santa's Surprising Origins, a story that received worldwide circulation and resulted in him being cast in the 2004 Hallmark Christmas movie titled Single Santa Seeks Mrs. Claus. He played the mall Santa who magically received the gift of sign language, and he has been involved in Hollywood. And Reverend Miles, welcome to American Priorities.
Thank you, Mr. Federer. I would love to be down there with you for this conference you're involved in with Apologetics. Sounds great.
Right. In North Carolina, the Southern Evangelical Seminary has the National Conference on Christian Apologetics. And for those that are not familiar, it's not apologizing for Christianity. It's being able to give a defense. And so Chuck Colson, Kay Arthur, Josh McDowell, and top leaders in the different realms of academia are here so that you can provide a defense for your faith instead of saying, well, I don't know the answer to that, and letting the other side gain the upper hand in the debate. You can say, wait a second, there is proof for God existing. There is proof for the validity of the Bible and for the idea of creation. Now, Reverend Miles, you and I were brought into knowing each other through our friend Peter Marshall.
Yes.
And Peter has been a guest on American Priorities, even just up until the month before he passed away.
And, that's right. And he also was not only a great historian, but he writes in with such clarity that it can make history really exciting for anybody that reads any of his books, which are excellent.
And we still encourage the listeners from Sea to Shining Sea, The Light and the Glory, Sounding Forth the Trumpet, and then the children's series of books that he has done. But tell us about your relationship with Peter Marshall.
Well, I met him at a conference. And at the conference, I managed to book him into Antioch, California, to be at my church for a week speaking, and also an outreach to the entire community. And so the services were packed and like interdenominational services, but he came in with a great deal of fanfare. The governor sent a proclamation welcoming him to the state of California. There were other dignitaries there. The head of the whole school board of that area, of our area, was also there as a guest. And the people had a chance to really start thinking seriously about the founding of our country, which seems to have gotten lost somewhere in the shuffle. So he stayed in my home during that time. So we had a chance to become very, very close, and it was writing. It was always studying, always writing, and I had met his mother, Catherine Marshall, before I met him.
Well, and then Catherine Marshall was involved in writing movies and even a TV series, if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, she wrote Christie, and it was a beautiful series. And what was the name, Ken? I think the director that they had for that was a Christian man that just put his all into seeing this series get on the air. Catherine Marshall was the writer's writer. I visited her. She had basically a farm with a huge barn that was cut out and a working place and over a dozen young women on typewriters typing up manuscripts and things. And, of course, that was back in the days before computers, so we had to do pretty well everything by hand. And I also met her current husband that she was married to after her husband had died. And it was quite a wonderful thing to be able to talk to a woman that I just felt had such an influence on America and the world.
Well, and the movie, or the television series, Christie, was about a Christian missionary teacher in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yes.
And her experiences of being on the frontier and ministering to these poor families. And just a darling film great actress that they cast in that. And then, of course, her husband, Peter Marshall, that 20th Century Fox did a major motion picture on his life. And, well, that is interesting that the governor of California sent a message to Peter, who was speaking at your church there in Antioch.
That's right. In fact, it got a lot of attention him being here. And of course, there was such a lot of respect for his father. But the fact is, as a historian, I just feel that he was pretty well unequal because he covered every detail. He covered details that a lot of historians would miss, which kept the zingers in his writings and made all the stories interesting, especially with the side stories that put you a little bit more on the inside of what the people were going through at that time. For instance, the one thing that really stood out to me was the fact when the tobacco was coming in, and this was a Christian foundation of our nation, and smoking cigarettes was highly addictive, and so it was not considered good for your health, and something very, very worldly. And the people themselves, that was the way, that was their main cash crop so that they could support the colonies. So anyway, one of the leaders there said, you know, just go ahead and make the tobacco, you know. In other words, just kind of hang the other thing, the idea that it may be sinful or whatever it is, just make the tobacco. But it's just a kind of a clash that we see in modern times as well that they went through back in those times. So I just find that all these little side stories and everything that he wrote about were so charming, and he was an excellent speaker. You know, he spoke at conventions all over the United States, and that's where I met him at one. I think it was the National Religious Broadcasters, and he was such a dynamite speaker, and of course every night he was there for the whole week speaking each night in my church, and it was it really pulled in a number of people. In fact, I started out by screening his movie, A Man Called Peter, and that was nominated for an Academy Award. It was a beautiful, beautifully done film that really took you to the inside of a church pastor's life. And this Scottish preacher was really very colorful, very knowledgeable, and of course his work with the Senate was absolutely legendary.
Yeah, Peter Marshall Sr. was an immigrant from Scotland, and he was a minister and was such an outstanding minister in the Washington, D.C. area that the United States Senate invited him to be the U.S. Senate chaplain. For those that are not familiar, from the very beginning of our country, both the House and the Senate have had chaplains that have opened every session of the U.S. House and Senate with prayer. And every one of these chaplains has been a Christian. Catholic, Protestant, some denomination of Christian. Now, over the years, they allowed a rabbi to open a session every now and then with prayer, although they were not on staff as a chaplain. And then just recently, they have allowed Muslims to come in and say their Muslim prayers in our U.S. Capitol, which
yes,
is quite a change. But this is Peter Marshall, the senior, and then the son, Peter Marshall, who is the friend of myself and Reverend Austin Miles, who is a chaplain out in California. Any other stories that you remember?
Well, you remember also, you were mentioning the fact that we did have chaplains and were on a payroll to lead in prayer, and they did prayers that kind of communicated with the happenings of the day, whatever was in the news, whatever the country was going through. That's been fought now. Michael Newdow, the atheist who wants to be the world's greatest atheist, now is fighting against the commitment or the inauguration of the president, and there's a new case just opened regarding that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're visiting with Reverend Austin Miles out in California. He is a chaplain, and when we come back, we're going to hear about this case that is being heard before, it's on its way to the Supreme Court, of whether or not we can have chaplains at our presidential inaugurations. And every president, even from George Washington, has had chaplains at our presidential inauguration. Michael Newdow is the one bringing the suit. We're visiting again with Reverend Austin Miles, and you're listening to American Priorities. This is Bill Federer, and if you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in at 888-533-3551. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Sleeping and resting are not the same thing. You can sleep 10 hours a night and still wake up with a restless heart.
Here's Dr. Tim Kemmel with a Family Matters Minute.
Maintaining a healthy pace in our homes involves a whole lot more than making sure everyone gets a good night's sleep. It's not a bad start, but it's a limited solution because it assumes that rest is merely a physical thing. Not so. We not only need rest for our bodies, but for our emotions and spirits as well. That's why families getting adequate sleep can still experience an overwhelming sense of restlessness. There's a reason for this. They're hurried. Not in a hurry, mind you, but hurried. Being a rested family is more about how we handle our days than our nights. Jesus summed it up well when he said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary, and I will give you rest."
Dr. Tim Kemmel has many great resources for couples, parents, and grandparents at familymatters.net.
Freedom Radio FM would like to thank our listeners and sponsors for their financial support of American Priorities. It's with your continued support that programs like American Priorities continue to find a place on our network. If you would like to make a contribution, just log on today at freedomradiofm.com and click on the donate button. Create a one-time gift or start a monthly contribution. Any amount is appreciated. If your business or organization would like to become a sponsor of this or any other program on Freedom Radio FM, please call 888-533-3551 and dial extension 11. Freedom Radio FM, lighting the way.
Do you, Robert Stanley Bannister, take this woman, Patricia Loretta Carlsworth?
Patricia.
What?
I've been meaning to tell you something.
What?
It's nothing big. I forgot to sign out when I left the military.
You're a deserter?
That's the technical term for it, but it's really just a misunderstanding. I do.
You're telling me now?
Well, I wanted you to know before we got married.
You're a criminal?
I'm not a real criminal.
And do you, Patricia...
We'll just need to move every few years.
Why haven't you cleared this up with the authorities?
Well, it's not like I ran away. I just needed my space. I mean, there's nothing wrong with what I've done.
Do you part?
Dear, it's your turn to say I do. Dear?
We all excuse ourselves for the things we've done, but we're not excused until we've asked the one we've wronged to forgive us. Since we've all sinned, have you acknowledged your need for God's forgiveness?
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
Now, back to American Priorities with your host, Bill Federer.
Reverend Austin Miles is our guest today on American Priorities. His website is revaustinmiles.com. And Austin, you were talking about the cases that's headed to the Supreme Court on chaplains. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, Michael Newdow has declared war on the United States. In fact, it was shortly after 9/11, and we were still digging up bodies in New York City when he declared the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional because it had under God in the pledge. And what was interesting, Mr. Federer, that was a time when the country, you know, had kind of drifted apart over the years. In fact, it really started after that thing in 1963 when they took prayer out of the public schools, and then the battle really began. After 9/11, the nation came together in a very spectacular way. Suddenly, it was okay to pray. Republicans and Democrats were talking together. Everybody was then joined in collective outrage to what had happened with that sneak attack of our country. So in the midst of all that, suddenly Michael Newdow's case comes up regarding the pledge being illegal. And what the country was divided. We were working together. We were going to see this never happen again. And he put a wedge right back into the country. Because by doing that, then it started the debate again. Well, wait a minute. It is separation of church and state. God shouldn't be involved in the Pledge of Allegiance. And so it started again. Well, he started filing one case after the other. He sued every congressman. He sued every legislator that was there, senator. He sued the president. He sued Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son. And suing everybody to make this case about the pledge. So now, of course, he's trying to make the inauguration itself illegal because under God is in that and that offensive. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but Michael Newdow, I wrote about that situation after that because the examiner, San Francisco Examiner, called me the moment this thing broke about the pledge becoming illegal. And considering the founding of our country, the solid foundation, and suddenly this comes in the middle of it. So they were asking my opinion. I had not heard about it until they told me, and that had just broken. So I went ahead and did some investigating, and so I did a story on it, and I told about how that Michael Newdow never married the child's mother, that he filed the suit on behalf of his daughter. That was the hook that he used on it. And I use hook because that's the way he said it was on CNN News. He filed it on behalf of his daughter, and he said she shouldn't be forced to do all these kind of things. Well, it turned out that the mother and the daughter are Christians, and the daughter had no hesitation about doing the pledge. She loved saying the pledge and begged her father not to bring her into the case, and so did the mother. And so I wrote about this, and I actually suggested that this was a fraud upon the court because he appeared as a family man concerned for his daughter when he made no legal decisions for her. The daughter was in the mother's custody during that entire time. They never lived together. Well, I got sued. He sued me because he's a medical doctor, but he also has been put into the Bar Association because he furthers everything that they want to do. So he can just flip these cases off, and he bragged for $52 he can file some papers that'll affect the whole nation, and that is what he's been doing. And he had some money from a health clinic he had established in New Jersey, so he had a couple of million dollars set aside, and so he devoted most of that to this particular cause that he has. So when I heard about that, I mean, I couldn't, you know, I said, well, there's nothing to this. What has he got to say? How is this slander? This is the truth. And it was the truth. One day I was out in the field doing chaplaincy work, and of course I deal with crisis situations, life and death things just about every day. And so I come home and I have these messages on my computer screen from various media asking what I thought about the decision with Michael Newdow. Well, that was in June when the Supreme Court decision, I knew he was going to the Supreme Court over the pledge issue. But that wasn't to be decided till later in the month, so I figured that's what it was they were calling me about, and I couldn't understand why they would do that in advance. Anyway, I was notified by the media that Michael Newdow had sued me for $1,476,000 and 96 cents, and it was approved by the court. I wasn't even there, had not been notified, because we have our Marxist judges out here in California that automatically go with him, and they would go with Newdow on anything he wanted. They had awarded him that money, successfully suing me of something I didn't even know anything about. And finally, I called up the courthouse, and I asked to speak to the judge, and I said, this is not possible because I didn't know about it. And the court told me very arrogantly, listen, the decision is already in, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I said, well, there's something going to happen here. I mean, this cannot be allowed. Anyway, the Thomas More Law Center, which is a Christian law firm, took over the case, and that went on for six solid years. He had me in and out of every... Well, I wasn't there. The lawyers represented me, and he wanted this personal confrontation with me on this because that would... He always got publicity. Everything he filed on me, he got some headlines somewhere. So it came to the point that we did finally have the trial, and it was... He was depending on really having a big audience. I said to the lawyer before the jury selection, I said, look, let's waive the jury trial because that's going to get the press interested. We just go right into a silent. He wants an audience. He's not going to get the audience. The press won't be there because the jury's not selected, but they'll get interested once it begins. So we did that, waived the jury trial, and I told him, I said, these Marxist judges out here are going to rule any way they want to rule, no matter what the jury said, no matter what. So I'll just take our chances. He was so set on his audience, he came in with a boombox. He was going to sing a song to the court about his philosophy and the fact that he loved his daughter so much. And, of course, the judge said, police, Mr. Newdow. But before that case, this was kind of interesting. After 6 years, we finally got in there. First time we were meeting face-to-face. And I was in prayer a few days before that because I knew that you don't really expect a lot of justice if you're not a communist in California. And I'm saying that absolutely literally. So I prayed. I said, Lord, and I opened up a Bible. My fingers landed on numbers where it said that fear not, I've already delivered your enemy into your hands and his people. And I said, well, I'll certainly take that. I went into prayer and I said, Lord, I would pray that Mr. Newdouse would be so confused that he wouldn't be able to put two words together properly. And so that seemed to take, and I called a couple of prayer partners I trusted, and they also prayed that he wouldn't be able to really speak properly. Now, here's a man that's been before the Supreme Court. He's been on every talk show in America. He does lectures, and he's appeared in some court cases, which he's instigated. The time came when he got up to speak, everything came out gibberish. First, he was disappointed there was no audience there. The words came out backwards, and everybody was leaning forward to try to figure what it was he was trying to say. Then he had a paper that was going to hang me. He had a stack of papers. He went through that, spent 20 minutes trying to find a paper that was going to hang me, which he couldn't find. Then he got panicky, and he starts arguing the original pledge case again. He felt some security there because he had argued that successfully. Well, by that time, after 40 minutes of that went by, the judge hit her gavel and said, Mr. Newdouse, this is not a place for your agenda. This court is supposed to be for a libel case. Anyway, I wound up winning finally after 6 years. And he was so hostile toward me that the judge called him down on that several times. It was just really incredible. He even started arguing the steroids case. I mean, it looked like he did a meltdown is what it was. And so it was so bad, after 2 days, the judge said, this is not a murder trial. And this is going to end at 5 o'clock today. And at 5 o'clock, it was over with. And she said, the attorneys, mail in your closing statement. First time I've heard that. But he waterboarded her to death, too. So he lost it. And the thing is now, if we hear from him again, he's going to be liable for all court fees and all lawyers' fees. Now, let me tell you where he's working in the meantime. He's working at the VA hospital in Palo Alto, California, as a doctor and surgeon. A man who hates America because he has a website in which he wrote and recorded anti-American songs to sell. And yet he's there in a veterans hospital working. And let me tell you something. Do you know what he did in the trial? He got my medical records and was going to present them to the trial. What medications the hospital put me on because, you know, I had a stroke and a heart attack. And he managed, and that's illegal. And I really, and I hit, boy, I pounded my fist on that one. I said, you're supposed to be a doctor, and these records are confidential. You have no right to make my records public, and I never gave you permission to do so. Well, anyway, the upshot was that was kicked out. I talked to VA about it, but he is still there. He's still working there as a doctor, but they do have a lock on him so that he cannot have access to any of my records in the future. But this is what's happening in America. So this same guy now is trying to say we cannot have God in the inauguration ceremony for the President of the United States.
Well, first of all, thank you for standing up for 6 years and fighting that battle. I know when I ran for Congress, the Democrat that I ran against filed all kinds of lawsuit type things, and it took 2 years of fighting it. But I can imagine only 6 years. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that the battle that Reverend Austin Miles fought is the battle for you and me. Because if he would have not fought that, it would have set precedents, and the precedents in the courts would have been against those that believe in God. So thank you again. RevAustinMiles.com. And Reverend Austin Miles is our guest. He is a chaplain in Northern California. When we come back, I want to hear a little bit about your on-screen appearances there in Hollywood and then some of the commentaries you write on your website about what's happening in America. And my friends, the world, especially in Europe and now in America, is going from drive into neutral before it goes into reverse. A country has to go from Judeo-Christian to secular before it can become Islamic. The secular movement is sort of like Roundup. You spray it on your lawn, it kills everything, but it doesn't stay that way. Pretty soon you have 3-foot-high weeds. And so we see this change happening. You're listening to American Priorities. This is Bill Federer, live from North Carolina. Be right back.
This is Walk the Way. I'm Jeff Klein. Who benefits from serving? A Palestinian girl and her new husband attend our church. Sammy and Matt wouldn't say they're believers, but they are committed to exploring faith in Jesus with us. They also believe in serving others. Once they came with us bowling on an outing we had with many of the resettled refugee families that live in our community. Sammy bowled with some kids from Iran who speak the same native language she does. They hit it off and ended up hanging out long after the bowling was over. Sammy says they stole her heart. She's been involved with them ever since, going to lunch, helping with driver's license, finding a doctor. Sammy also feels something changed inside her. Sometimes service transforms us, not just those we serve. Could God be using His way to get Sammy and Matt to believe that He is the way? How does God work in the lives of His people? Will you let God transform you as you love others? Let's talk about serving at facebook.com/walktheway.
Why are there so many jokes about lawyers? Okay, I guess I know why, but we shouldn't confuse jokes about lawyers with the seriousness of the law. The boundaries put in place to ensure equitable and just treatment of all citizens. Law was important in the Bible, too. The New Testament summarizes the purpose of God's law this way. It was a tutor leading us to Christ. When we read God's law and see how many of His standards we have broken, we suddenly see our need for a Savior. So the law guides our behavior, and it guides us to Christ. This is David Jeremiah, encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover the purpose of God's law on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. Route 66, start your journey home today.
Welcome back to American Priorities. To become involved in today's discussion, call toll-free 888-533-3551. Now, here's your host, Bill Federer.
Reverend Austin Miles is a chaplain in Northern California. And Reverend Miles, you had gotten involved with acting. And tell us, because some of the listeners may have actually seen you on TV, tell us about how you, a little bit of your testimony here.
You know, I do a lot of writing, and I love history. And I wrote a story about the history of Santa Claus, Santa's surprising origins. You know, the whole thing started in a church with a bishop. And that story was so popular, it went all over the world. It is still published every year annually, very, very widely, and they've had a couple of radio programs and TV programs based on that. And Hallmark had seen that, saw the story. And they managed to get my unlisted telephone number. They found a photo of me somewhere on the Internet. Now, that was back in 2004, and I couldn't imagine where a photo would be of me on the Internet. And they invited me to appear in a movie called Single Santa Seeks Mrs. Claus. And so I went down and did it, and it was a real fun thing to do. I enjoyed it. But interesting, originally, it was a story about Santa's son has to take over for Santa because he must retire. He's worked long enough. But before he can take over for him, he has to be married, because who ever heard of a Santa Claus without a Mrs. Claus? So the whole thing is the son out trying to keep incognito to meet a woman that would be Mrs. Claus. And of all things, he falls for a woman that doesn't even believe in Santa Claus, so that was quite a neat thing. It's a beautiful story, by the way. So then I was to play the Papa Santa originally, so I had my lines all down for it, but when I got there, and we went through with the producers the night before, reported to the set the next day. They said, we have a little change in casting. I said, what is that? He said, well, we have a pivotal scene where Santa Jr.'s powers are seen for the first time with a mall Santa, and it requires sign language, and the ones we've tested do not know sign language. The ones that can do it don't have the compassion for it, so we'd like for you to recast as the mall Santa. I said, that will be great. So the scene went as a lovely scene. It went very, very well. And that's turned out to be one of the favorite Christmas movies, and that's shown every year, several times each year now. So be sure and watch for it. I think you'll get a kick out of it. And plus the fact it's a very good movie. But actually, I had had some experience in show business before. I was called to the ministry, Mr. Federer, at the age of 10 years of age when something extraordinary happened, and I knew beyond doubt that there was indeed God, there was indeed heaven. But nobody knew what to do with me because we had a Christian family, but nobody knew what to do with me. So
Pardon? What happened?
We were out on a boat in the Kentucky Lake, and we were with a family that John and Kate Sheffield, and they were upper-middle-class family. We had upper-middle-class in those days. We were good friends. We're on this cabin cruiser out on the Kentucky Lake there in Kentucky, and Natchez Trace, they called it. Well, Kate could not swim. And during the cruise, she suddenly, in a freak accident, tripped and fell overboard and went through the water. Well, we all dove in like crazy to try to find her, which is extremely difficult to do with the water churned up. We made several dives. Eventually, we found her and brought her up and put her into the boat. We put her over a barrel, and we began to pump on her rib cage and push. Water was coming out of her nose and out of her mouth. And several minutes went by, and finally somebody said, "It's no use. She's gone." And I don't know why, but as a 10-year-old, I said, "No, please, just one more push, please." We did, and she coughed, and she came out of it. And the first word she said, "Why did you bring me back? It was so wonderful." She described the colors, the music, the peace. Nothing in her body hurt. And she said, "There was Jesus with his arms outstretched. It was so beautiful. And I kept trying to get to his hands, and something kept pulling me back." Well, of course, that was us. We didn't want her to die. And she said, "I just wish you would have left things as they were." Now, you know, she lived to be a ripe old age. And you know, she stayed ticked at us for the rest of her life, even though she had a good life, good marriage, because we brought her back. She said, "I wish you'd have left things as they were." So I knew perfectly well as a 10-year-old that heaven is real and God is real. I'd gone to Sunday school. I was raised going to Sunday school. But, man, this confirmed it. Then that same year, my great uncle was on his deathbed, Uncle Cole, very distinguished old gentleman. And we were taking turns going in to say goodbye to him because he was getting ready to cross over. We knew that. As I walked in, he looked up. He said, "Where did they go?" And I said, "Where did who go?" He said, "The ambassadors." I said, "What ambassadors?" And with a serene smile on his face, he said, "The ambassadors from heaven." And at that, his head dipped, and he made a crossing with a glorious smile on his face. So I knew. I knew that I had to be a minister, but again, nobody knew what to do with me. So then, as time went along, and as I was starting to grow up, I ran away with the circus when I was 14.
You ran away with the circus?
I did. I did. In fact, I got in masqueraded as a clown. That was a story of its own. I was so shy growing up that if I saw somebody coming down the street, I'd walk on the other side of the street so I wouldn't confront them face-to-face on the way down the street. It was a small town I lived in. So behind, I put some clown makeup on to slip into the circus masqueraded as a clown. Because the circus had come to town. It was in a ballpark. This particular producer had taken the circus out of the big top, putting in the ballpark where the sky was the limit. He was the first to do that. So the police were sponsoring the circus, so I put on this makeup, and the clown makeup, I managed to get a quarter's worth of clown white, got into my mother's makeup kit, put lines here and there, got some rags, put together a clown suit, and walked to the circus. And so I got to the door, the gate, and the cops were guarding the gate. They were sponsoring it. I said, "Excuse me, excuse me." They stepped back, opened up the gate. I walked right on in. And so I got in there, and then I looked around so I could see it close up because I really wanted to see the circus close up. And suddenly a hand clasps my shoulder, and I turn around. I look at this hand up the arm. And I see this very stern face of a man named Jack Leontini, who was the boss of the circus. He was tough. And I said, "Oh, blarney, I guess I'm out of here before I even see the show." And he said, "What are you doing standing around? Get in there. You're on. Your clowns are on." And he literally pushed me in the center ring because all the clowns were there. So I was in the center ring, and I started doing some things. I managed to be in the right place at the right time. Took a couple of prat balls. Seemed to be in the right place. And nobody knew the difference. And I made the next three performers with them the same way. So when the circus packed up its props to go to the next town, they saw me there. When I showed up with my suitcase, they could see how young I really was. They called my mother. She said, well, I don't know what to do with him. He's had this show business bug in his system since I can remember. So I guess it would be okay to let him go with you. Maybe it will get that out of his system. Well, I went with him, and I became Kokomo the Clown. I became very well known. The story in itself, how all that came around, eventually became the ringmaster of the circus. And it was, I traveled the world over, and the next thing I'm doing other show business things like movies. I did a movie back in those days. In fact, you'll see it on my website. It was a comedy called Mac and Meyer for Hire. I played the magician that accidentally had sawed my assistant in half and hired these two nuts and have an odd jobs company to be my assistants in a great New York opening. And that's on my website, because guess who the star, the guest star is in this old comedy? The comedy was great, and it was just been refound. I thought that was lost forever. Somebody found it, a fan found it, got in touch with me, and so I have that now in my own archive. So when I got back, the ministry was reaffirmed to me in a very spectacular way at a time that I would have least expected. And when that happened, I reaffirmed that call to the ministry, and I've been serving God ever since. Can I tell you what happened on that call?
Well, I'd love to. This is a fascinating story, and for those that are just joining us, we're visiting with Reverend Austin Miles. He is a chaplain in California, and has, as he has explained, traveled the world, been involved in the media and entertainment industry, and we've been both friends with Reverend Peter Marshall, who recently passed away. But go ahead and tell us that story.
Well, I was doing the circus, and at this time, I was making four figures a week way before no ringmaster ever made that kind of money. And any circus performers in general, I was so highly paid because the character went very, very well. The presented it well. It got a lot of excitement with people. It was kind of the character of what a ringmaster would be, I suppose, including the flowery announcements. I'm in a show in Memphis, Tennessee, a special circus put together. They were going to call the show Beautiful. They had a big top set up for this. Beautiful, beautiful, colorful big top. The ropes were solid white, velvet curtains that the artists came in and out from. And on top of that sat the bandstand. That's where the musicians played. And the rings were inside. It was just lush, beautiful, something Hollywood would have done. I'm in the middle of the circus, came in with a great deal of publicity, of course. And suddenly, in the midst of the show, somebody started yelling out from the bleachers. I continued with the show. Somebody yelled out, another person yelled out. And this was back in the 60s, so I figured, oh, maybe this is the day of the protest. Oh, blarney, I hope nobody's going to protest our circus for some reason. But finally, I couldn't continue on. I finally signaled the band. We stopped. I said, what is it? Somebody said, heart attack, get a doctor. Sure enough, some man had dropped of a heart attack in the bleachers. I went into automatic mode. I said, well, everybody here, please stay in your seats. Every second may mean a difference of this man's life or death. Stay in your seats. Do not move. You, sir, over here, go to the tower. Have him go for an ambulance right away and get him here right away. Let's keep the ways clear for the ambulance to come in. Is there a doctor or nurse in the house? Nurse, thank you. Would you please go back and try to help the man? They were pounding on his chest. They pounded on it. They put the ear to the chest, listened, shake their heads. They tried some more, and it was useless. It appeared useless. So I resorted to something. I'd gotten away from God at that time, Mr. Federer. I had seen some things that had kind of turned me off to, even though I'd been raised in a Christian home, called to the ministry. And so I had been listening to an old program called the Don McNeil Breakfast Club, which was on ABC. And during that program, Mr. McNeil would say, now, let's have a moment of silence, and each in your own words, in your own way, let's pray for the peace of the world. And I would bring that into mind, which I'll tell you about in a minute.
Well, you've got us on the edge of our seats, on the edge of the bandstand with this story. We're going to come back and hear the rest of the story with Reverend Austin Miles and then some of his insightful commentaries on what's going on in the world today, from Israel to communist support of marches in Washington, D.C., and you won't want to miss this as we finish up. RevAustinMiles.com, his website, and you're listening to American Priorities with Bill Fetter. I'm speaking to you live from Charlotte, North Carolina. I am at the National Conference on Christian Apologetics, and we'll be broadcasting from here from tomorrow as well. If you'd like to call in and join us on the program, 888-533-3551. We'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome to Lighten Up, brought to you by Compassion International, releasing children from poverty in Jesus' name. Lighten Up is a moment to brighten your day and encourage your walk with Jesus. I'm Dr. Wes Stafford, president of Compassion, inviting you to tell the truth with comedian, author, and motivational speaker, Ken Davis.
What does it cost to tell the truth? A little boy tells it this way. Our teacher asked us what our favorite animal was, and I said, fried chicken. She said that wasn't funny, but she couldn't have been right. Everyone else in the class laughed. My parents told me, he said, to always be truthful, and I am. Fried chicken is my favorite animal. I told my dad, and he said my teacher was probably a member of PETA. He said they love animals very much. I do, too, especially chicken, pork, and beef. Anyway, my teacher sent me to the principal's office. I told him what happened, and he laughed, too. Then he told me not to do it again. The next day, my teacher asked me what my favorite live animal was. I told her it was chicken. She asked me why. So I told her it was because you could make them into fried chicken. She sent me back to the principal's office. He laughed and told me not to do it again. I don't understand. My parents taught me to be honest, but my teacher doesn't like it when I am. Today, my teacher asked us to tell her what famous person we admired most. I told her Colonel Sanders. Guess where I am now? Paul did time for telling the truth. Christ went to the cross for telling the truth. Truth must be pretty valuable. Lighten up and live.
You've been listening to Lighten Up with Ken Davis. For more information, you can visit us on the web at compassion.com. I'm Dr. Wes Stafford, encouraging you to lighten up.
Welcome back to American Priorities. To become involved in today's discussion, call toll-free 888-533-3551. Now, here's your host, Bill Federer.
We're talking with Reverend Austin Miles, and your life sounds like a movie. It reminds me of that one Disney movie where the boy runs away with the circus. And
Toby Tyler,
that's right. And, yes. and then, of course, the cartoon with Jumbo the elephant.
Yes.
And... Actually, that was the actual name of an elephant, and that
word became
part of the English language. And so we use the word jumbo to describe things, but that was actually the name of a circus elephant. But pick up with the story. You got us very interested here.
Okay, we're in a circus tent filled with an audience. A Mid-South Fair is all around us. A man is dead of a heart attack in the bleachers. Me, the ringmaster, trying to keep the people seated and in order until the ambulance came so they could have access to get to him right away to get to the hospital. And so I was thinking of the Dom and Neil Breakfast Club, so I could see the audience getting restless, and I knew if one person got out to leave, there were a lot of free attractions outside to go to. They would all get up to leave. I would not have finished my performance. That was, unfortunately, my main priority. So in a matter of showmanship only, I thrust my hand out to the crowd. I said, well, each and every one of you who has the faith, would you please bow your heads and in your own words and your own way, pray earnestly for this man. Every head bowed. I looked up at the bandstand. The musicians' heads were bowed. I looked over some of the performers and the clowns. Their heads were bowed. I bowed my head, too. And I felt a power go through the tent like a tingling went through my whole body. In a couple of minutes, I saw the corner of my eye. A stretcher was in. They put the man on, took him out. I said, amen. And as soon as their heads were lifted, I immediately went into the circus to keep it going. And when we got to the finale, no business like show business, a prop hand looked at me and nodded and said, boy, you can say that again. That night, I went straight to my motel room, just kind of a little bewildered of the things that had happened. The next day, I reported to the fairgrounds. I came in. Now, mind you, I was new there. And they had like a little carnival midway on the fairgrounds as well. As I walked through, everybody was speaking to me from the concession stands that I'd never met. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. And all that, everybody was extra friendly. I got to the big top. There were hundreds of people gathered around the big top. I thought, well, this is pretty early for a matinee, for people to be gathered for a matinee. And it was over an hour to go before the show. As I got there, a dwarf clown, June Dewsbury, came running up to me. He said, where have you been? We've been looking all over for you. And I said, well, I always get here about this time for a matinee. She said, oh, that was really something last night, wasn't it? I said, oh, yeah. How is the man? Anybody know? She said, what do you mean, how is the man? I said, well, just what I mean, how is the man? She said, you don't know what happened last night. And I said, well, I know that, you know, we had an interruption in the show. She said, you really don't know what happened last night. I said, would you please tell me what happened last night? She said, well, so we're in the midst of the show, and this chap drops of a heart attack. I said, I know, just go on. She said, they were pounding his heart trying to get it going, but his heart had stopped beating. He was dead, you know. Things were very serious indeed. I said, okay, just go on, finish the story. What happened? And she said, then you did a marvelous thing. You had everybody bow their heads to pray. Well, I bowed my head too, but I kept one eye on the chap at all times. And she said, things got very silent. And suddenly, I felt a power sweep through me. Power? That was the same thing I felt at the other end of the tent, standing by the microphone. I said, and? She said, the chap started breathing again. They took him to the hospital, but they sent him right home. He's perfectly well. And she said, everybody in the fairgrounds is talking about it. In fact, the fair manager was just here looking for you. And all the people that had been there the night before were attracted back because everybody in that circus pen felt the power of something go through, which they learned was the power of God. So at the end of that, I went back to my motel room. And usually I would get something to eat first, then go to the motel room. But this time I went straight. I didn't bother eating. There was a Gideon's Bible on the table. I usually push that aside to make room for my suitcase. I picked it up, flipped it open. My fingers landed on James 5:15, and a prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise them up. I wanted to see what else the Bible had to say. I flipped some more pages. It landed on Matthew, where it says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Well, I thought where we were, Memphis, Tennessee, the so-called Bible Belt. I must have been the only one in the whole tent that didn't have such faith, because I'd lost it. But boy, everybody else in that tent did, and they literally prayed a man back to life. Shortly after, I visited a friend of mine who was a stuntman in Hollywood who was a Christian, and he took me to a Christian businessman's luncheon. There, I officially dedicated myself to God, gave my heart to Jesus, and I feel a second man was raised from the dead. Then I started studying for the ministry. I knew God had reaffirmed that call to the ministry. My first assignment when I was ordained was to be a chaplain to the world of show business because I knew the people. And so that was for a while. I did guest speaking. I was in the evangelistic field for a number of years. And then I'm currently with the church on a pastoral staff in Oakley, California at the Mountain View Christian Center. And I'm running a chaplain program, training chaplains at this point, and plus all the realms of ministry and not only with the church, but handling calls in the field, as the whole community knows there's no inconvenient time to call me if they need me, and that's the chaplains I'm training as well that are out in the field. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch, but in my little thing in show business, yeah, I was able to do that. In fact, I was, even as a chaplain in show business, I was invited to appear in some things. I did a lot of television programs, and I was even in The Hustler, the movie with Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason. I was one of the pool hall bums. That was quite a thing, too. So it's been a very, very interesting life, Mr. Federer. But, you know, every experience I have has really been important to the chaplaincy that God has entrusted me with, because I've had so many experiences. I can relate to just about anything someone has had or gone through. That includes betrayal, physical pain, mental pain, any number of things, being in need, being in want, and also being prosperous. I've gone through the whole realm of all that. And no experience in life is wasted. I've learned that. Because whatever you've gone through, for instance, when I've going through things in my life, I always went to people that I knew that had gone through something similar and landed on their feet. That was the best counsel I could find. As far as our chaplaincy program at the church, yes, we're taking the church outside the walls of the church. It's the community chaplains. I have five now ordained. One is a national race car driver chaplain that was ordained on that particular night, too. He's a race car driver, pretty well known, and so he's got a chaplaincy that has started since his ordination that is fantastic. And I love what I do. I wouldn't trade places with anybody. I was rich at one time, but I'm really wealthy now. There's a big difference, you know. When you're rich, you're afraid you're going to lose your wealth or something else. When you're wealthy, that means that you have that sustenance forever in your everyday life, and I'm more fulfilled now than I have ever been.
Well, Reverend Austin Miles, you know, as you were speaking, I just had the thought that maybe there's somebody in the listening audience that they're being called to be a chaplain. And can they contact you through your website, Reverend Austin Miles?
Yes, I can. And actually, my email address is chaplainmiles@aol.com.
Well, that's easy. ChaplainMiles@AOL.com. And
yep.
It's R-E-V for Reverend, R-E-V-A-U-S-T-I-N-M-I-L-E-S.com, RevAustinMiles.com. And Reverend Austin Miles, thank you for sharing with us today on American Priorities.
I hope we can do it again. I had a couple of things I was going to bring up, but maybe we can do it another time.
Well, we definitely will.
That I'm doing commentaries on.
You're doing excellent commentaries, and ladies and gentlemen, we'll have him back. You know, P.T. Barnum had a circus, and they had millions of people attend, but on Sundays, he let it be used by Dwight L. Moody for evangelistic campaign. And great movement of God in that circus. Well, we got to run today. We want to pass to posterity the blessings of freedom. Become a friend of Freedom Radio at freedomradiofm.com. My website, americanminute.com. God bless, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
This has been American Priorities. The opinions and views expressed on today's program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or sponsors of this station. Tune in again as we cover the crisis confronting our country and see them come into focus in light of history. That's next time on American Priorities. Rebroadcast of this program is strictly prohibited without the express written consent of American Priorities and the Edgewater Broadcasting Network.